Daniel whispered. She felt the enveloping sense of warmth as his arm encircled her shoulders again. Winding through Saturday evening traffic, which slowed with congestion around Lincoln Center, the cabbie steered south and east through Midtown. In 10 minutes, they were at the Waldorf Astoria. Daniel paid the driver and they stepped out onto the sidewalk on Park Avenue. Using a napkin again, he took the plastic bag with its sick contents and stuffed it into his gym bag. "Be careful," she said numbly. "The blood." As they walked into the lobby, she stopped and blinked. "My God, it's beautiful."
"You've never been to the Waldorf?"
"Not exactly in my financial genetics."
"I generally just meet clients here, but I've stayed a few times, when I'm having work done on my place. This is old New York. That's what I like about it."
Her head swiveled back and forth, taking in the rich wood, the massive clock in the center of the lobby, the soaring ceilings.
"Come on," he said. "We'll sightsee later."
At the desk, they checked in. 2 rooms, Daniel using his credit card. He was worried that the police or someone else who might want the October list could track her here if she used hers. Data mining was all the rage nowadays, she'd read in the New Yorker. They got out of the elevator. Their rooms weren't adjacent, but were on the same floor, not far apart. As they walked down the corridor, Gabriella felt the seeds of attraction unfolding again, even greater than the feelings she'd sensed in the bar yesterday when they'd met. "Yes," she kept thinking. "Sarah." The name didn't stop the stirrings deep within as she stole a glance at Daniel. But then, how can you possibly think of sleeping with him? Still, she countered, perhaps you've been lonely for too many years. And because Daniel Reardon is a little, maybe a lot, like you. But she reminded, stay focused. Sarah. In the hallway, he said,
let's get something to eat, or a drink at least.
Yes, I guess I need something. That morning's breakfast, which they'd shared, was a hazy memory. After dropping the bags in their respective rooms, they met downstairs in the subdued, elegant lobby bar. They sat beside each other in a banquette, their knees touching. The server, a woman with severely bunned hair, approached and greeted them, sharing that her name was Liz. She inquired if they were in town on business or for a vacation. Gabriella let Daniel answer.
Just seeing the sights, he said amiably.
Sorry the weather's not nicer. It was warm last week.
They ordered cheese and pate and bread and a bottle of Brunello. Sipping the potent Tuscan wine, they talked about everything, free associating. Everything, that is, except the October list and the kidnapping, much less the plastic bag. She'd brought to the table with her the files from her apartment, labeled Prescott Investments, open items. But she let them sit unopened, as if afraid they might not have the answers as to how they could save a kidnapped child. She looked at her phone and sighed.
From Raphael. He got out safe and made the delivery. So far, so good.
Nodding at this bit of good news, Daniel slipped his jacket off, and she caught a glimpse of a line of reddish flesh, a scar visible in the V where his shirt tugged open. It crossed from chest to shoulder. He caught her eyes and pulled his shirt closed again, self-consciously.
Can I ask what happened?
He seemed to be debating.
Sorry, I didn't mean to pry.
No, I'll tell you. A few years ago, I was driving with the kids up to New Hampshire, and I was really tired. I shouldn't have pushed it. I fell asleep and went off the road.
Jesus.
The car went down an embankment into a river. The doors were wedged shut. It started to fill up with water.
Daniel, no.
God, it was cold. We'd gone to see the leaves. It was September, but really frigid.
What happened? She whispered.
We would all have drowned, but some local guy happened to drive by. Looked like he was out of Deliverance, you know? A mountain man sort of, redneck. He drove his pickup down the embankment, grabbed an axe and jumped in after us, even though the water had to be about 35 degrees. He just swam to the car and kept smacking away at the back window until he got us out. I got cut on a piece of metal after I shoved the boys out.
Oh, how terrible.
Daniel gave a brief laugh.
And you know what? As soon as we were on the shore, he waved goodbye and left. Wouldn't take any money, wouldn't give me his name even. He just acted like hell. Who wouldn't risk freezing to death to save somebody? Like it was the most natural thing in the world.
It hurts still? A nod toward his chest.
No, no. That was 5 years ago. Stiff sometimes in the damp, but that's all.
He grew quiet.
I was stupid and nearly got my sons killed. It was like that guy gave me a second chance. I don't really think I deserved it, but there he was.
She lowered her hand on his arm and pressed. She wanted so badly to kiss him, but with some effort, refrained. They returned to the wine, and both fell silent. Daniel signed the check, and at her suggestion, they divided up the files. They would spend the remaining hours of the evening until exhaustion struck, looking for any leads to cash that Charles Prescott might have hidden. They walked to the elevators. When they exited the car, he accompanied her to her door. She hugged him.
Daniel, I...
don't know how to thank me.
Her response was to grip him harder and surrender to sobbing.
She'll be okay, he said. Your daughter'll be all right.
Gabriella wiped her eyes and, stepping away, breathed deeply. Controlled herself. A few seconds passed. They remained immobile, listening to voices laughing a few rooms away, a TV rumbling with an action flick. She opened her door and stepped inside, turned back to him. Daniel eased closer. Would he kiss her? She wondered. She wondered, too, how she would respond. But instead, he offered the most chaste of embraces, murmured,
"Good night,"
and, holding his stack of folders, stepped back into the hall. The door swung shut, and she was alone. Chapter 18. 5:55 p.m. Saturday, 2 hours 35 minutes earlier. They walked along a northbound street on the east side, dodging trash and tourists and early diners, night shift workers, dog walkers and homeless men and women, or perhaps just locals who appeared homeless, scruffy, inattentive to hair and beard and laundry. Their mission, which was proving difficult, was to find a cab to take them to her co-op apartment. Gabriella muttered angrily,
"What they did back there, those jerks, it set us back an hour, and the deadline's in minutes."
"At least you're not in jail," he said.
She didn't respond to this tepid reassurance.
"Jesus, Daniel, it's hopeless. I knew we couldn't get the money in time, but at least we could have found some concrete lead before the deadline. Something to reassure Joseph that we'd have the cash soon. But now, shit!"
Desperation crimped her voice. She jerked her head to the east and south, where they'd just come from.
"They're freaking sadists, those two."
"And where the hell are all the cabs?" he muttered.
Several sped by, either occupied or off duty. Daniel waved his wallet at one of the latter, but the driver just kept going. They turned up a street that was grubby, darker, and more pungent than in tourist land, less congested in hopes of finding a taxi. They passed stores in which dusty displays of DVDs, or lace and buttons, or used books or hardware sat faded behind greasy glass, a sad porn shop lit with bile green fluorescence, Chinese and Mexican takeout restaurants that could not possibly have passed city inspection. In front of several of these establishments sat slight, dark-complexioned men, smoking and speaking in hushed tones or making mobile phone calls. Gabriella's cell phone rang. She looked at her watch.
"Deadline time."
They paused and stepped to the brick wall of a building so no one else could hear the conversation. She took a deep breath, hit accept, and activated the speaker so Daniel could hear.
"Joseph?"
"Ah, Gabriella. I've been looking at the phone, staring. It didn't ring."
"It's just six. I was going to call you, I swear. Listen,
you have my money?"
"I've found the October list."
"Have you now?"
That teasing voice again.
Cause for celebration.
What does it look like? Is it thick? Is it thin? Is it printed on construction paper?
She blurted in a guttural tone.
Tell me, how's my daughter? Tell me.
She's a little troubled.
As if Joseph was pouting.
What?
What do you mean?
I told her I hadn't heard any good news from you. So there might not be any good news for her.
You told her that?
Gabriella whispered.
Now, what do you think? Would it be in my interest to make your daughter feel any more panicky? Honestly, I can't even joke with you. You need to relax a bit.
Okay, the money? He asked, his tone suddenly blasé.
I've got the list.
Heard that part. But saying that tells me you don't have the money. And since you dodged the question about describing the list, I'm a little skeptical of that, too.
No, I swear.
Ever notice, Joseph offered, when people say things like, I swear, and you've got to believe me, they are invariably lying.
I'm not lying. I have it. It's in a place for safekeeping. I didn't want to walk around with it.
Not much need for that. Proportionally, there are less muggings in New York than Portland, Maine. So, fine.
Ah, you found the list. Wunderbar.
Let's get back to money.
I've been running around town all day trying to do what you asked, she cried. Please, just a little more time. It's taken longer than I thought. I'm sorry.
Racked with guilt, are you? Daniel stiffened with anger. His face grew dark, but he remained silent. She leaned close to the phone.
Please. It's been a nightmare. The police are everywhere. I can't just sneak into the garden behind Charles's townhouse and start digging for treasure, can I?
Her voice caught. Then she muttered angrily,
Tell me right now, how is my daughter?
She's alive.
Alive? But is she okay?
Pretty much.
She must be terrified.
And I'm afraid of heights. Snakes aren't my favorite either, but we cope. Now, money makes the world go round. That was the deal we made.
He seemed again to be pouting.
You've breached it. You've broken our agreement.
I'll get your money, she snapped. I just need more time. I'm doing everything I can.
More time. More time.
His voice was taunting.
Just a little.
Could be, you know, that you've found the money and you're stalling, trying to figure out a way to keep it and get your daughter back.
No. Why would I do that?
Because you're out of a job, remember?
She began to tremble. Daniel put his arm around her. Joseph said,
You were Charles Prescott's office manager.
Yes, she whispered.
So you know something about business?
She hesitated. What do you mean?
You know about business?
He repeated petulantly.
I know some things.
What are you asking? You familiar with the concept of penalties? Joseph's voice was completely flat. The smarmy tone was gone.
Like you don't pay your taxes on time, there's a penalty? Well, you didn't pay me on time. You missed the deadline.
I tried.
Try is a non-word. Either you do something or you don't. It's impossible to try to do something. So, new deadline. 6 p.m. tomorrow.
Thank you.
I'm not through. 6 p.m. tomorrow. You deliver the October list. And now, 500,000.
No. You can't do that.
Is that what you say to the IRS?
I'm so sorry. I can't pay what you want. No penalty for me. Look at me as the excuse Nazi.
Giddy once more. His laugh was nearly a giggle.
Why not just a million? She raged. Or 10 million.
Daniel squeezed her arm. She said to Joseph,
I'm doing the best I can.
Ah, just like trying. There's no best or worst. There's keeping up your half of our agreement, or not.
We don't have an agreement.
You're extorting me. You kidnapped...
Hello? Didn't we have a conversation about movie dialogue? Now, consequences. I was saying, first, the penalty, the extra 100K. Then, second, you have to go on a scavenger hunt.
A what?
A scavenger hunt.
I don't understand,
Gabriella said, her voice choked.
What's not to understand? It'll be easy.
I'll bet it won't take you more than 30 minutes to find the prize.
You're insane.
Well, now that's all relative, isn't it?
Go to Times Square, behind a dumpster in the alley at 48th and 7th. West side of the intersection.
What's there?
She asked in a high, shaky voice. But Joseph's response was to disconnect. They didn't need a cab. The prize Joseph had sent them to find was only 4 or so blocks away. They plunged into Times Square, a disorienting world of brilliant lights, massive high-def monitors, overlapping tracks of pulsing music, hawkers, street musicians, impatient traffic, mad bicyclists, tourists, tourists, tourists. The crowds were denser now, more boisterous, anticipating plays and concerts and meals and movies. In 10 minutes, they'd come to the intersection that Joseph had described. She said, "There, that's the dumpster," and started forward.
"Wait," Daniel said.
"No,"
she said firmly. He tried to stop her, but she pulled away and dropped to her knees, looking behind the battered, dark green disposal unit. Gabriella fished out the CVS pharmacy bag and looked inside. She choked.
"It's Sarah's sweatshirt."
The pink garment was wadded up tightly. She started to lift it out and froze.
"Blood, Daniel."
The streaks, largely dried to brown, were obvious. There was something primitive about them, like paint on the face of ancient warriors. Gabriella gingerly lifted out the shirt, which was tied with a gingham hair ribbon. As she did, the garment unfurled and something fell from the inner folds to the grim floor of the alley. The colors were the pink of flesh and red of blood, and the shape was that of a small finger. Daniel got to her just before her head hit the cobblestones. Chapter 17. 5:30 p.m. Saturday, 25 minutes earlier. The only good is what furthers my interest. Joseph Astor recited this to himself as he carried his shopping bag toward a warehouse on the far west side of Manhattan in the 40s. Traffic on the streets was noisy. On the Hudson River, silent. His large form blustered over the sidewalk, and people glanced at his bulk and his dead eyes and his curly blonde hair, and they got out of his way. Joseph paid them no mind after noting that none of them was a cop or other threat. An impressive view of the intrepid aircraft carrier before him, Joseph turned down a side street and approached the one-story warehouse. He undid the heavy master padlock and muscled the door open, stepped in and slammed it shut. He flicked on the lights. The warehouse was mostly empty, though there were 2 vans parked inside, one completely useless, and sagging boxes stacked in one corner, molding into an unpleasant mass on the floor. The place was little used and typical of 1,000 such buildings, 2,000, 3, throughout the New York area. Small, solid structures, always in need of paint and fumigation, either windowless or with glass panes so grimy they were virtually blacked out. Most of these buildings were legitimate, but some were used by men, mostly men, who needed safe houses for certain activities. Away from the public, away from the police. Long-term leases paid in advance. Utilities paid by fake companies. Tonight would be the last time he'd use this warehouse. He'd abandon it forever and move to the other one, similar, in Soho, for the rest of the job. Which he might have called the Gabriella job or the Prescott job, but instead had, with some perverse humor, taken to calling Sarah's sleepaway. He took his jacket off but left on the beige cloth gloves. Always the gloves.
He strode to the corner of the place, a workbench. In the center of it was the windbreaker he'd showed Gabriella earlier in the day, along with a pink sweatshirt on which Sarah was stitched across the chest. To the right were a dozen old tools, and from the pile he found a large pair of clippers, like the sort used for cutting branches or flower stems. The edge was rusty, but sharp enough. The only good. From the shopping bag, he extracted the fiberglass hand of a clothing store mannequin. He'd stolen the plastic appendage from an open loading dock behind a showroom in the fashion district earlier that afternoon, after he'd been tailing Reardon and Gabriella near the building with the Prescott Investments sign on the front. Gripping the clippers firmly, he cut into the dummy's little finger at the second knuckle. This he rested in the middle of the sweatshirt and lifted out the last item in the bag, a beef tenderloin sealed in thick cellophane. He used the clippers to snip a hole in the end of the bag and let the blood dribble onto the plastic digit and the sweatshirt. There was more liquid than expected. The result was suitably gory. Excellent. He bundled the shirt up with a gingham hair ribbon. Seeing the beef blood spread, he thought, how lovely. How delicious. A line he would remember to share with Gabriella later. As he worked, he opened a bottle of his favorite beverage in the world. His special brew. It was virtually all he drank. Sustaining. Comforting. He drank deeply. A bottle a day. After tidying up and putting the steak into the refrigerator in a tiny kitchen area of the warehouse, he put his handiwork into a CVS drugstore plastic bag. He returned to the table and sat, sipping his beloved Hawaiian punch. The original flavor, red. Joseph wondered what the reaction would be to the memento inside the bag. Another glance at his watch. The deadline was looming. He was thinking about Gabriella and the October list and Daniel Reardon. Joseph had met him only about 6 hours ago on the street with Gabriella and already disliked him intensely. Then his thoughts segued to Gabriella's friend, Frank Walsh, whom he did not know but had only followed around and, of course, data mined. Joseph always did his homework before he went out to ply his craft. Pudgy Frank Walsh. Nerdy Frank Walsh. Joseph didn't have any particular dislike for Mr. Walsh. He considered him to be a rather stupid, naive man. Pathetic. He reflected that it was a shame Frank was going to spend his last night on Earth with his mother and not getting laid. At least, Joseph thought, sipping the sweet drink. He assumed not.
Ick.
The September cold seeped in, and even though he had plenty of natural insulation on him, he shivered. Joseph was eager to get this part of the job over with and return home to Queens, where several new Netflix movies awaited, snug in their little red envelopes. Most people would probably be surprised that a man like him, who had killed 22 people in his life, men, women, and, though only out of necessity or accidentally, children, would enjoy movies. And yet, why not? Killers were people, too. In fact, he'd learned some things about his line of work from movies and TV. The Long Good Friday, The Professional, Eastern Promises, others. The Sopranos, not so much. Although he liked the acting, he wasn't quite sure why Tony and the crew, none of them particularly clever, hadn't been arrested and thrown in the slammer halfway through the first season. Luck, he guessed. No. Scriptwriters. He turned his jacket collar up and contemplated with pleasure returning home, sitting in front of the Sony by himself, well, with his Maine Coon cat, Antonioni, and watching the latest discs. He wondered if he should take the tenderloin with him for dinner. Nah, he'd do a lean cuisine tonight. Save the calories. Joseph glanced at his watch. He took the CVS bag, stepped outside, and locked the warehouse door. Chapter 16. 4:50 p.m. Saturday, 40 minutes earlier.
I never thought we'd find it,
Gabriella said breathlessly.
The October list.
They were on Third Avenue, walking fast away from the office building. Daniel Reardon said,
I didn't get a look at it. What could you tell?
I just glanced at the first page. Names and places and numbers. Maybe accounts, maybe dollar amounts. I don't know what they mean. And I didn't recognize anybody.
They continued in silence for a few minutes before he said,
In the list, did you see anything about October?
No.
I wonder what it means. An anagram? A name?
Maybe,
Gabriella suggested.
It means something's going to happen next month. Something really bad.
She sighed, as if feeling all the more guilty about not turning the list in.
How long, she asked,
until Joseph's deadline? A pause, and Daniel said,
About 1 hour and 10 minutes.
No! It's that late?
Gabriella tugged her jacket closer. The wind was brisk and filled with autumn chill.
There's no way we can find the money in time. We don't have any leads.
Daniel agreed.
I don't see how.
We have the list, though.
He hesitated, then said,
That's not what he wanted by 6. He wanted the money.
But it's the most important thing to him. Didn't you get that impression? If he's reasonable, he'll take it and let Sarah go.
I'm sorry, Gabriella, but I don't think he is a very reasonable man.
She stared at him, and there was hysteria in her voice.
But it's all I've got!
Still, he persisted, we've got to try to find his money, or at least a place where it might be, so we can tell him we're getting close. That could be enough, if we can give him something specific to buy more time.
Her shoulders slumped, and she nodded back at the building.
If there's nothing in the office, then I don't know where else we could find any clues to...
She abruptly stopped speaking.
What?
Frowning, Gabriella said, Last night, when I met you? He smiled.
I remember.
I'd left work early for that meeting about negotiating the warehouse lease in Bankers Square, the rush job. I had some files with me.
Right. I was thinking you were quite the workaholic. What's in them?
Open items for the accountant. Some business, but some personal of Charles's. If I find something in them, we can at least tell Joseph we've got a lead.
Then let's get to your place, fast. We don't have much time.
They hurried toward the uptown street to catch a cab. Daniel was lifting his arm to flag one down when a voice from behind them barked,
Hold it right there!
They stopped, exchanged surprised glances, then turned around. Gabriella blinked and looked at the two detectives with unbridled anger. She whispered to Daniel,
No, we can't wait. We have to get to my place now.
She turned to the cops.
Detective Kepler and...
She looked toward the other one, smaller, his complexion grayish.
Sorani.
Kepler gestured the cab to keep going.
No!
Gabriella barked. The driver hesitated and then, responding to the detective's angry glare, sped off to pick up another fare. Sorani asked,
Have you heard from your boss?
No, I don't know anything more about where he's gone. I would have called you if I found out anything.
Would you?
Kepler asked.
You aren't too busy?
What's that supposed to mean?
Her voice was flint.
Hanging out in your apartment watching TV?
The detective shot back.
Who knows what you've been up to?
She asked.
How did you find me here? You've been following me?
We were at Prescott Investments. Someone fitting your description was spotted walking away from the place. We thought we'd take a stroll around this beautiful neighborhood and see if you happened to be here, after committing a felony.
The more relaxed of the two, Sorani, said, There was a report that somebody maybe broke into the Prescott office just now.
What?
She asked, frowning. Kepler regarded her closely and cynically.
Was it you?
I
don't lie. No,
Daniel said firmly. Gabriella turned to look at Daniel, who was easing forward to the officer.
Gabriella wanted some personal items, but we saw there was a police seal, so we left.
Yeah?
Kepler asked.
That's right, Gabriella said, looking around, as if Joseph was nearby, coolly observing this conversation.
Oh, and by the way, somebody'll be watching you every minute.
Look, we have to go. I don't have time for this.
Kepler continued, paying no attention to her protest.
There was an officer in front of the building. Why didn't he see you go into the lobby?
I don't know, Gabriella said stiffly.
If he was supposed to be guarding the place, ask him.
Kepler snapped.
What the hell were you looking for?
Some personal things. You heard that. A checkbook, some bank statements of mine, nothing you'd be interested in. Nothing having to do with Charles.
And you didn't break the crime scene seal?
Of course not.
It's a crime, you know,
Sarani said.
I assumed so. That's why we left.
Kepler said ominously.
I've got an officer going through the place now, just to see if anything's missing.
Daniel said,
This has been a tough time for her. Couldn't you just give her a break?
Kepler seemed to be practicing his skills at ignoring people. He looked Daniel up and down with what appeared to be contempt, then moved away, pulled out his cell phone, and made and received several calls. Sarani stood nearby, less hostile but at attention as if to grab them if they tried to escape. She glanced at her watch. Daniel, too, looked down at it.
The time, she whispered. The deadline.
Her jaw was trembling.
We have to get those files in my apartment.
The deadline was 45 minutes away.
We really have to go.
Kepler disconnected.
Glad we ran into you,
he said, not sounding particularly glad at all. He nodded to his phone.
The FBI's just found out something else. Those clients I was telling you about earlier today? A number of them are in the financial services area. The U.S., Europe, and the Far East. Brazil, too. A lot of stock and bond traders. But at least one was a known arms dealer, specializing in explosives and chemical weapons. He's the only one we've been able to identify. Gunther. Probably that European guy you mentioned in St. Thomas. Thanks for that, by the way. Don't know the first name. From Frankfurt, originally. We think he has a safe house somewhere on the Upper East Side. That name ring any bells?
No. Charles never had a client named Gunther.
Well, he did,
Kepler snapped.
I just told you that.
What I mean is I never heard of him.
Suddenly, Kepler glanced down at her purse and saw the corner of an envelope protruding.
What's that?
She eased away. Nothing.
Nothing? I'll bet it's more than nothing.
Just personal things.
What?
I'm not answering that. If you want him, get a warrant.
Kepler looked at Sarani and said,
What did we learn in detective school?
His partner said,
Which part?
About when there's been suspicion of a felony, say, breaking and entering.
Oh, breaking and entering an office building?
Yeah, exactly. That means that we can search a suspect without the warrant, right? The Constitution lets us do that.
Sarani said,
It encourages us to do that. Don't you just love that Constitution?
Kepler mused, ripping the bag from her hands and lifting out the envelope. Chapter 15. 3:15 p.m. Saturday. 1 hour 35 minutes earlier. Moving cautiously, the couple continued down the damp, tree-lined street of Midtown in silence. Cautious of necessity. They knew the police had to be watching the Prescott office. Gabriella eyed cars speeding along the cross streets. Dark cars, pale cars, taxis, limos, trucks. Vehicles, as much as pedestrians, were part of the tapestry of Manhattan. But she noted nothing out of the ordinary, nobody paying particular attention to them. Though seeing the unmarked police car at the curb, they paused near a ginkgo tree encircled by a low, wrought iron fence to keep marking dogs from the trunk.
That's it,
she whispered, indicating a 6-story office building about 50 feet east on the same side of the street where they stood. On a sign beside the front door, a half dozen businesses were listed: therapists, a chiropractor, a graphic design company. At the top, Prescott Investments, LLC.
How are you holding up?
Daniel asked.
I'm fine,
dismissing the question. Gabriella recalled that when she was a teen, the professor often comforted her by asking the very same or a similar question.
You okay? All right.
He'd sit close and look her over. She could smell tobacco and aftershave. She'd initially reply that she was fine in this same tone as now, but he'd smile and persist. And he'd finally work out of her that she was sad or angry about some incident at school, or because somebody had laughed at her. Even at 13, she was tall and skinny as a post, or simply because the day was cold and overcast. Gabriella had had mood problems all her life. The professor could usually trick the sadness away, for a time at least. This memory she put away, with difficulty. "There she is," Gabriella said, nodding in the direction of her attractive Latina co-worker, Elena Rodriguez, across the street. The woman was walking toward the building from the opposite direction, her eyes down, face grim. Elena Rodriguez looked up and saw them, then started across the street. Her gaze swiveled to the unmarked police car parked in front of the office building, manned by a single officer. She hesitated in the street, as if trying to avoid being seen, and stepped back. When a truck passed, she hurried across after it, straight toward an oncoming taxi. There came a wrenching scream and the screech of tires like a bird of prey's cry, followed by a loud thud. Daniel's and Gabriella's view was obscured, but an instant later they saw Elena spiral to the curb.
"God," Daniel whispered.
Immediately, the officer sitting in the police car leapt out and ran to her aid. The cop looked around once, then bent down toward the woman and pulled out his radio. The cabbie raced up, gesturing frantically with his hands.
"Jesus," Daniel muttered. "Is she all right?"
It did look bad, Gabriella realized, but she whispered, "We can't worry about her. Let's go." She gripped Daniel's arm and pulled him forward. Taking her keys from her pocket, she hurried to the office building. As the cop was bending down over Elena and making a call, they stepped into the lobby. Gabriella slipped the key into the inner door lock, and in less than a minute they were on the second floor, at the door marked with another brass plaque, Prescott Investments, LLC. The door was sealed with a yellow adhesive marker. Crime scene, do not enter. The phone number to call in case one wished to access the office was at the bottom. Daniel hesitated, but Gabriella opened the door of the office and pushed inside, tearing the NYPD notice neatly in half with a loud ripping sound. Closing the door after them, she stopped, blinking, and looked around. My God, they took everything. The computers, shredders, hard drives, file cabinets, credenzas. They must have brought moving trucks. Daniel, too, examined the rooms, then glanced from the window.
I can't tell how Elena is. The trees are blocking the view. I think she's still on the ground.
We can't worry about her. We have to search. The money and the October list, we need them. Her head swiveled as she regarded what few objects were inside. Some bad artwork, photographs and diplomas and certificates up on the walls. Also, vases of fake flowers, office supplies, cups, mugs, wilted flowers, pictures of family, bottles of wine, boxes of coffee and snacks. On two coffee tables were professional journals, recent editions of the New York Times and Wall Street Journal, several books, debt markets in BRIC countries, accounting procedures, and tax treatment of oil and gas leasing partnerships. In a corner were some storage boxes, missing lids but filled with papers. Gabriella dropped to her knees and prowled through the cartons.
Helpful?
Daniel asked as he began looking through drawers which all appeared to be empty, except for office supplies. She read through them quickly. No. These are just real estate records about the building. Nothing to do with Charles's business. She began rifling drawers and looking through closets, while Daniel was prying up carpet and knocking on walls, searching, apparently, for hidden compartments. A man's approach, Gabriella thought. Not necessarily a bad one. They continued the search. But 20 minutes later, Gabriella stood stiffly and looked around. She said in despair, "Nothing." She closed her eyes and sighed. Then she looked mournfully at the clock on the wall. He kept his own watch fast, 10 minutes, Charles did, so he'd never be late, never miss an appointment or conference call. Her eyes still on the timepiece, she said, "We have 2 hours." "Oh, Sarah," she choked a sob. "What are we going to do?"
Daniel peered out the window again carefully.
The cop's on the radio looking at the building. He seems suspicious. Oh, hell.
What?
Somebody just came out of the building. Some woman. The cop called her over.
Daniel stepped back fast.
He's looking up again. I think he's suspicious. We better get out.
Which was when Gabriella cocked her head. Oil and gas.
What?
She pointed to the reception area coffee table. That book? It was a textbook, thick and intimidating. Tax Treatment of Oil and Gas Leasing Partnerships. She said, "We've never done any of that kind of work." She picked up the tome, flipped through it. "Daniel, look." The first 100 pages were dense text about accounting and tax procedures. In the middle, though, were a dozen pages bound into the book that had nothing to do with partnerships. On the top of the first page were the words, "October List." Gabriella laughed.
Yes!
He hid it in plain sight.
Smart of him. The list's actually bound in like any other pages, so it doesn't bulge suspiciously. No one would think twice about it, and there wasn't much chance of anyone stealing a boring textbook on leases.
Gabriella carefully tore the list out.
Let's copy it. She looked around. Wait, the copier's gone. The police took it. Why?
Daniel shrugged.
Maybe the memory chip? Fingerprints, I don't know.
Gabriella glanced out the window. Shit. She stepped aside, fast. Stay back.
What, the police?
No, somebody else. I saw a man in the alley across the street looking up at the window. It might have been Joseph. A dark coat like his, I couldn't really tell.
How could he have followed us here? Why would he want to?
He said he'd be checking out if we went to the cops. Gabriella glanced carefully out the window again. I don't see anyone. I'm probably being paranoid.
Daniel said,
Maybe not. We don't exactly know what's in the list, but something tells me Joseph won't be the only one who wants it.
She looked again out the window. The cop? He's on his radio. He knows something's up.
We have to get out of here.
This is the only copy of the list. We can't risk Joseph or the police or whoever's out there. A nod at the street. Stealing it. It's my only bargaining chip to get Sarah back.
She examined the room fast and spotted on a credenza the bottles of wine.
Gifts from clients, she said.
She nodded at a dark green box of Dom Perignon champagne.
Could you open that up?
Daniel undid the clasp and lifted the top. She folded the pages of the October list very tightly and, when he lifted the bottle, slipped them under it. He sealed the box back up and put it into a plastic bag. With a black marker, she wrote a note on a post-it and added that to the bag.
What are you doing with it?
Daniel asked.
I'm going to have it delivered to my friend Frank.
Frank Walsh, Mr. Complication,
Daniel said with a dry smile.
Yeah, but a trustworthy complication.
She glanced at the window.
What's the cop doing?
Looking out, Daniel reported.
Still on the radio, but he's glancing at the windows here. He suspects, definitely.
Gabriella returned to the desk on which the nameplate read E. Rodriguez. She took a blank letter-sized envelope and into it stuffed a dozen pieces of paper from her purse. Receipts, discount cards, a few bills. She shoved the envelope into the coach and left a corner protruding.
Insurance policy, she said. Just in case. Now let's get out of here.
With Daniel carrying the champagne, they left the office and she closed the door. The sound of the elevator on the move filled the hallway. She looked around and nodded to the stairs. They climbed to the third floor where they found a slim Latino man pushing a mop.
Rafael!
Gabriella! I heard about Mr. Prescott. It's not true, you think?
I'm sure it isn't. It has to be a big mistake.
I'm praying for him. My wife, too.
Thank you, Rafael. This is Daniel.
The men shook hands, and then Gabriella asked,
Could you do me a big favor, please?
Sure, what do you need?
She took the bag containing the champagne and handed it to Rafael.
I have to talk to lawyers now and get records together. I was supposed to take this to a friend of mine today, but I can't make it. It's real important to him. Can you please drop this off at his building in the village?
Sure, sure I do that.
He's at 780 Greenwich Street. It's near Bethune. His name's Frank Walsh. She jotted the address and name. He pocketed the slip of paper.
Okay.
You're a lifesaver, Raphael. She fished in her purse and handed him 420s.
Oh, you don't have to do that.
He shook his head. No, no, I'm insisting.
Well, gracias.
He reluctantly pocketed the cash. Nada. If he's not there, just leave the package with the doorman. Gabriella and Daniel headed to the stairwell again. She caught his eye, in which she detected a gaze of wry humor. Frank's only sort of a boyfriend. Really?
Hey,
he offered.
How can I be jealous of somebody you're calling the complication? If you'd said stud or lover boy, well, that'd be a different story.
She flung her arms around him and kissed his neck. They fled down the stairs, exiting into the alley behind the building.
Chapter 14. 2:50 p.m. Saturday. 25 minutes earlier. Turtle Bay, that portion of East Manhattan near the United Nations, was once one of the worst neighborhoods in the city. In the late 1800s, the area was littered with unregulated businesses. Tanneries, slaughterhouses, breweries, power plants, and coal yards, where the rate of injuries and death among workers was horrific. Dark, overcrowded tenements were squalid and stank and were nearly as disease-ridden and dangerous as the blue ribbon winner of depraved decay in the New York City of that era. 5 points, near where City Hall is now. Gabriella knew this because the professor's favorite topic was New York history. He knew the city the way some men know their favorite baseball team's stats. The name Turtle Bay, he had told Gabriella years ago, as they sat in his cozy den one night, derived from the fact that the East River shoreline nearby was a small harbor, protecting cargo and passenger ships from the whims of the waterway, which was treacherous even on calm days and deadly in storms. Turtles would bask on the mud banks, in the reeds and on rocks, while herons and gulls dined on fish and fish remains in the narrow ledge of shallows before the river dropped steeply to its grim bottom. He'd told her,
"The place was a dumping ground for bodies back then, the river was. True now, but less so. After a bad rain, skulls and bones'd be uncovered. Kids'd play with the remains."
The river may still have been a watery grave for the occasional mafia hit victim, but my, how 125 years changed things. The area was now elegant and subdued, and the harbor gone completely, straightened by the FDR Expressway. Gabriella was standing next to Daniel Reardon in the residential heart of the Turtle Bay neighborhood, having snuck away from the shadows, in all senses of the word, of the Upper West Side, where they'd been the recipients of such bad news. They peered down the quiet side street and easily spotted an unmarked police car parked in front of a small office building that Gabriella pointed out as the home of Prescott Investments.
"You were right," she whispered. "They're watching the place, looking for Charles, for me."
The car with the cop inside was facing away from them, but still they stepped back around the corner onto Second Avenue, where they couldn't be seen. They were blinded by deceptive sunlight, which didn't do much to cut the chill.
"How many companies in your building?"
Daniel asked.
"A dozen or so. Small ones, generally. We're small, too."
Just then, Gabriella stiffened, looking up the street. Her eyes grew bright.
"Elena."
Daniel followed her gaze. The slim Latina, about 30 years of age, in jeans and a Fordham University windbreaker, strode toward them. Her hair was pulled back and it seemed damp, perhaps from a shower interrupted by Gabriella's call.
"Oh, Elena."
Gabriella hugged her.
"Isn't this awful? I'm sick, I'm just sick."
Her eyes were red, as if she'd only recently stopped crying. Gabriella introduced Daniel as a friend. Looking the handsome man up and down, Elena Rodriguez shook his hand and winked to Gabriella, woman to woman, meaning, "Well, he's a keeper." "We work together, Gabriella and me."
"I know, I heard."
She puffed air from her cheeks.
I guess I mean worked together. Not anymore.
To Gabriella, have you heard anything else?
No, just what the police told me this morning.
Elena's pretty face darkened.
Did you talk to the same ones? Kepler and some Indian man?
I didn't like them at all, Kepler especially.
Yep.
Elena looked wistful and nodded in the direction of the office building. In a soft voice,
I walk this way to work hundreds of times, and I've always been so happy. Now,
she shrugged. Then the woman sighed and asked,
So, what can I do? I'll do anything to help.
Daniel and I are going to try to find something in the office that'll prove Charles is innocent. Find the asshole who's setting him up. Gabriella hesitated and then said,
Exactly.
Daniel glanced her way, undoubtedly thinking how guilty she felt for lying to her coworker and friend.
And we need your help.
Sure.
I have to tell you, Elena, it's kind of extreme.
Hey, girl, did I say anything?
All right. I need you to get hit by a car.
What? I don't really mean get hit. Just start to cross the street and pretend to get hit. When a cab or a car goes by, slap it on the door or the side and fall down on the sidewalk. The cop guarding the building will come to help you. When he does, Daniel and I'll slip inside and search the office. Just don't give him your real ID. Make something up. You left your purse at home. So you don't get in trouble after they find out the office got broken into.
Daniel Reardon stared at Gabriella for a moment, then gave a shallow laugh.
You come up with pretty good plans, he said.
I was one hell of an office manager, Gabriella replied.
When I said anything, the pretty woman muttered, I kind of meant stay up all night reading through files.
But if you want me knocked on my ass, girl, you got yourself an accident. Hey, I get to scream?
As loud as you want.
Chapter 13. 12:30 p.m. Saturday. 2 hours, 20 minutes earlier.
Jesus,
Detective Brad Kepler muttered.
That's awful.
He was angry. And cold, too. Stiff. Sore. They were on the roof of the building across from Gabriella's co-op apartment on the Upper West Side. Both men had earbuds in, one each. They were sharing.
Ugh,
Sarani said. Kepler gave a harsh laugh.
That's supposed to be funny?
Sarani didn't get it.
The noise you just made.
The what noise?
The You grunted. It's the same as that.
Grimacing, Kepler tapped his earbud. Then he stared back at the open but curtained window of Gabriella's living room.
What noise?
Sarani repeated.
I grunted?
You grunted. You said,
Oh. And?
What are you upset about? Sarani asked, sounding pissed off that he'd been accused of something. Kepler didn't care. In this day's pissed-off World Series, he was winning.
So, we just told her that her boss is booked on out of town. She's lost all her savings. She's out of work. And what's she doing? Doing him. It's wrong. Just plain wrong.
He's pretty handsome. Give him that. Looks just like that actor.
No, he doesn't.
But you know exactly the actor I mean, right? So therefore, he does. And I think he's good-looking.
Kepler believed his partner said this to torture him a bit more. Sarani shrugged.
It's not my business what she does in there. Yours either. It's our business to watch her, that's it. Nothing more than that.
Gabriella and her boyfriend had surprised them by not remaining on the streets, but heading to her apartment. The detectives, prepared to follow her, had scrambled to set up the surveillance on a nearby building, sitting or kneeling on the cold, pebble-covered roof. Kepler and Sarani started the recorder and trained the microphone at its target and waited. Soon they'd heard voices. This was hot shit electronics and they could make out a fair amount of conversation. The discussion inside had initially been mostly about Prescott and the company, and how Gabriella still had trouble believing the terrible things those a-holes had said, meaning, of course, Kepler and Serrani. They had also caught a comment that she was shocked and angry about what had happened. All the dialogue got recorded. Nothing was helpful. As for visuals, there hadn't been much to see at first. Shadows, wafting curtains, reflections off shiny surfaces. Then, about 20 minutes ago, the cops had registered some soft whispers, and Kepler blinked as he gazed through the window with the binoculars. He gripped Serrani's shoulder, whispering, "Jesus Christ." They both gaped at the sight of Gabriella taking off her sweater. In her bra and tight stretch pants, she walked to the window and pulled the curtain shut.
"Jesus."
Silence for a time. Then the sounds of lust had floated through the airwaves. And it was still going strong. Punctuated by an occasional,
"Yeah, there, don't stop."
"My knees hurt. Why do they have stones on the roof?
Drainage, maybe?"
"Oh, the rain doesn't go through the pebbles?"
Serrani said, "You are in way too much of a bad mood."
"Oh, look at your pants." "What? Oh, Christ."
What seemed to be tar stains speckled his knees. Kepler heard Gabriella being ordered to
get up on all fours. "That's how you want it, right?"
She replied breathlessly that yes, that was exactly how she wanted it. And the started up again. Serrani laughed, which made Kepler all the angrier. Then there came an extended which meant, Kepler guessed, that the party was over with.
"Post-coital bliss,"
whispered Serrani.
"About time. I'm ready to get the hell off the roof. It's freezing up here."
He rose from his squat. Kepler said,
"When she leaves, you better be ready for it. We stick on her like glue."
"I'm ready," Serrani said. "Do I look like I'm not ready? And stick on her like glue? Could you pick a worse cliché?"
Kepler ignored him. But the pursuit didn't happen just then. From inside Gabriella's apartment, whispers arose. And the game began again.
Shit.
Serrani muttered, sitting down once more. Kepler stared. His partner rarely cursed. The Charles Prescott op was bringing out the worst in everybody. Chapter 12. Noon, Saturday. 30 minutes earlier. Gabriella pressed a tissue to her eyes as she and Daniel were back on the sidewalk, heading for Central Park, silent and digesting the stark news they'd received in the lobby of her building. They were on pavement crosshatched by sharp shadows from the trees overhead. The September sun continued to radiate fierce power, though little heat, like a distant spotlight. Occasionally, Daniel's arm brushed hers, and she wondered if he would embrace her for solace. He didn't.